Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
It is Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch streaming on ESPN Plus every day. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we got some great ones today. King McClure going to stop by, help us with some tournament talk. Adam Schefter, get us all the latest news coming out. The NFL agreeing now today on the 17-game schedule for the upcoming season. And Nick Friedell may even stop by and try and squash some of these Steph Curry rumors that Brian Windhorst is all of a sudden throwing out into the universe. But Jhené Egbuemeke not here today, off conquering the world like we always tell you guys. And so we're delighted to have our friend Shea Cornett popping back into the studio. What's up, Shea?
Happy to be here. I love that intro. Thank you. Happy to be here. It's a sunny day here in Connecticut. It feels like there's a lot of news, a lot of sports to go around. So happy to be sitting in 6 feet apart from you, Michael.
I have always said, Shea, because Jhené obviously does her leg of the show from Los Angeles, so it's sunny and beautiful there every day. She's never really
so
known
unfair.
Otherwise.
I know.
She notices on the days when it's nice out here how much better our entire show staff on the Bristol side is.
It's so true. It's everyone's happier when the sun is shining and like we don't see snow in March. It's a win.
Yes. No snow in March is a very, very big. As someone, you spent a lot of time in Chicago beforehand, you know all about snow at inopportune times of year.
This is a win for everyone when there's sunshine and no snow in March.
A win for everyone in here. But it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because maybe not a win for the player side or people that are fans of clean, even-numbered math, because the NFL owners approved the expansion of the regular season to 17 games, the long-expected decision that's going to generate, obviously, tons of additional revenue in this spot. This was agreed to as part of the 2020 CBA, Shea, but still official today, and we know this is something I'm sure fans are going to love because it's more football, but we know it's complicated on the player side, even if it was agreed to, because this is now another shot of wear and tear on the body.
Wear and tear on the body. I know money still needs to be negotiated too, and I'm sure they'll go back and forth on this until there's an agreement. However, it was something, as you mentioned, that was agreed upon a long time ago. It was inevitable. I actually think 18 games is more inevitable. But you and I were talking before the show started, and I am one of those people that has slight OCD. And so now a 17-game slate, while I'm an NFL fan and I'm happy to see more football, we're at a point now where we're going to have to start saying, well, before the schedule moved to 17 games.
Yes.
It's almost like the merger, you know, like we've said these kind of stats so many times. And that's hard for me, of course, not to say over 500, under 500. All these things that have become part of our NFL lingo are now going to have to change. But the wear and tear part on the players is the most important. And I just wonder, as we see 17 games, maybe it moves to 18 games. I don't think in our lifetime it'll ever get to 20. But point being, as more games regular season increases, I wonder if we're going to start to see load managing now on the NFL side, something that we haven't really ever seen. I mean, you see the Pittsburgh Steelers, Big Ben Roethlisberger, and some of their older veteran players when they haven't had a proper bye week and whatever at the end of the season when they've already clinched the playoffs. But now I wonder if we're going to see more of that because you don't have a double bye, even though you add an extra game, and how that impacts overall how you plan for the upcoming season.
Yeah, planning is going to be the really interesting part of this. And like you said, there are still other things that have to happen. George Atala, who works with the NFLPA, came out the other day and said this is going to automatically trigger changes to the off-season workouts, in-season practice schedules. But what you brought up there, if this is going to keep expanding, and with the NFL, we know they're always looking for bigger and better, It feels like the next expansion, not only schedule-wise, is going to have to come with rosters, because all the things you talk about, I worry even less about, let's say, quarterbacks and wide receivers and more the lines of scrimmage. Defensive linemen, you're already rushing them in and out on packages. Offensive linemen, we know you're only usually carrying seven going into game day. Those are the areas where the course of a long season, you're going to need bodies to be able to roll through there just to play football that doesn't look like a train wreck like we've seen sometimes early in these seasons.
And eliminating a preseason game, while that sounds nice, well, like, hey, look, we're eliminating. Really, that matters for the bottom half of the roster, not even half, I would say, in order for them to make a team. I agree with you, though. Creating more jobs on the NFL side, whether that's the practice squad, the regular season roster, wherever it is inevitable. It has to happen.
And it was something we saw bits of this season in the NFL.
Remember, right,
because
of COVID.
They had all these interesting practice squad rules to try and help because they knew you were going to need access to more guys in that spot. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. That fourth preseason game being gone there, that's for people like me. when I was trying to make a roster to play in, Shay. Like, you walk up into that one and the starters are all sitting inside the locker room figuring out where they're going to go to dinner after the game and stuff like that. They're trying to hype you up, and we're all out here like it's our last shot on
Earth. Well, it is, though. You're trying to make a roster. You're trying to get paid. I get it. I mean, I fully understand.
I will say that is where I gained the most respect for the fans of the Green Bay Packers, because my last football game ever was the fourth preseason game. I was with the New Orleans Saints. And again, it's me and future used car salesmen out there playing in this game. And yet the entire stadium in Green Bay was full in preseason four watching this football game. That's why I looked around. I was like, all right, this place just built a little different if you guys are going to come watch us.
And Lambeau is like such a, now we're on a tangent, but it's like, I've been there many times, obviously being in Chicago, covering the Bears and the Packers and whatnot. It feels almost like a very elevated high school football stadium, because you're like on top of the field as a fan or on the sidelines. Anyways, I'm getting it. And they have the best grass in all the NFL.
I will say the coolest part about that stadium, and now we're off on the full tangent. Yeah, we're Shanae totally, Golick Jr. here, Mike Golick Jr., Shay Cornett hanging out. But I will say, because we're talking about Lambeau in that fourth preseason game, the coolest part to me was the tunnel. You're coming out as a player, because it's this small little concrete tunnel. People, when they come to Notre Dame, they would always tell opposing teams, don't let the ghosts get you on the way in. Meaning, if you get caught up in all this history, you're going to lose the game as an opposing team before you ever get to the field. I heard the ghosts coming out of that tunnel there. Like, it was one of the cooler, more chill-inspiring football moments
ever. And it's
got
the automatic gate that goes up and down just by, like, your footprints. I know. I get it. I understand.
It is a very, very unique situation. And that's also... It's going to be interesting to see how this continues to get elevated, because when we look at this 17th game now in the schedule and the way they've agreed upon this, it's going to alternate. All right, for the AFC and the NFC, every other year, one conference is going to have 9 home games versus the 8 road games and vice versa on that. And also got brought up in all of this that each team will now every 8 years be required to play one game abroad as part of the NFL's program there. So going to start to see that even expanded, because we saw South America, Mexico, in addition to some of the places we're used to.
And I actually thought every 8 years is generous, because I thought this was going to be much more frequent. I've only been to one NFL game overseas, and that was in London 2 years ago, I think it was now. And it was amazing. And it's so funny, because they don't, you know, like in London, for example, where I was, they don't understand football rules the same way we do. I mean, that is what we watch. They watch more soccer, rugby, things like this. And so every time the ball is kicked, no matter what it's for, any kind of kickoff, they cheer. They love
it's incredible.
Any kind of kicks. And I it's just funny, but my point being is I was surprised by every 8 years. I thought it would be much more frequent than that, because I know the NFL is trying to make an imprint across the entire globe, and I think that's very generous every 8 years, to be quite frank.
It is, and I think this is a way to kind of assuage some of the fears for the top-end teams, because also, no disrespect to what we've normally seen in that abroad product, it generally tends to be the Bengals and the Jags. Like, it's usually been some of these bottom-of-the-league teams in this spot. But I am curious, at Mike Golick Jr., at Shay Pepler on Twitter, what do we call this moment? Because, like you said, we've got the common era in baseball, we have got before and after the merger when the AFC and the NFL came together. So what do we call this? The expansion?
Yeah, I know. Prior to a 17th game? I don't know what you call it. There's nothing trendy. Like, there's no buzzword there.
You know what? We've got a chance to be early to that. So okay. Tweet us at Mike Golick Jr., at Shay Pepler.
You're way more creative and witty than me with this kind of stuff.
I told you this before. So Shay and I were talking on our pre-show call, getting ready for all this. And Shay made a comment about how I go to the vault for movie quotes effortlessly.
He always does.
And I said, and your husband, Jordan Cornett, who's our great friend, who we're here around this show plenty, is also a former big. He's a big guy.
Yes.
And I said, it's a defense mechanism. If you walk into any offensive line room in America, you are going to hear quotes, funny movie lines, and all these witticisms traded, because we're fat and smelly, Shay. Like, we got to have something to draw people into us.
It's a big man thing, I guess, but like, you have an ability to recall scenarios in movies and songs, I've noticed too, that I'm like, how do you even remember that? How do you pick that up and remember that exact moment in history? It's a gift. My husband has it too. It's really, truly, it's a gift. I can't even remember what I watched yesterday on TV besides the Final Four, of course.
Yeah, that is true, which we will get to, by the way. The Elite Eight working into the Final Four, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. So again, as the NFL owners approve the 17-game schedule, we've had that going on. But coming up next, Shay mentioned the Elite Eight and the Final Four. We had an absolute monster slugfest last night in the women's tournament. And then in a moment, it was obscured by something even bigger. We'll get to that next. Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Shea Cornett filling in with us here on ESPN Plus.
Chinay Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
What did you see when DeJounay drove the ball?
What did you see?
I was surprised they didn't call a foul.
Then ride it like that.
Harrington on the drive. Harrington forces it up. No! Rebound, UConn!
An instant classic last night as UConn and Baylor duel in the women's tournament. UConn gets the win, and it doesn't come without a whole host of post-game controversy. Chinay Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr., Shea Cornett filling in for Chinay today, kind enough to join us. You hear her on the weekends here on ESPN Radio with her husband, Jordan Cornett. We will get to some takes that came out of your guys' show from this weekend. You thought you'd come here and get away from the sound of your husband's voice. Not so much.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's fine. Everyone knows him around here. Like, it reverberates off the wall. I'm used to it.
That is true. I'm going to say, listen, the Cornett household well represented in the Chinay Ngolick Jr. show out here. We are brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. And you heard that ending there. Baylor going for the final shot. Controversy in what was a no call in that situation. DeJounay goes up for that final shot and is met by two UConn defenders in a pretty critical juncture of this game. They end up getting another chance to inbound it late there after some, I believe, missed free throws by UConn. Ultimately, it's stolen, and UConn holds for the win. But the no call at the end of that game, Shea, first and foremost, right or wrong in that spot?
It was a missed call. Let's call it what it is. 100% was a foul. But Baylor didn't play well enough in the second half in order to win the game. And to me, that's the way I'm going to look at this. I don't care what the sport is. It could be basketball, football, you name it. If it has to come down to a last second call, not always does that mean that team deserved to win the game. And I feel like this is an example of this. Unfortunately, Baylor played much better in the first half than they did in the second. Came down to this. Was it a foul? 100%. She was hit in the face. I mean, instantly you knew it was a foul. It was a missed call. But I'm not going to say that this is a reason why UConn advances and Baylor doesn't.
No, I would say the reason UConn advanced was that 19-0 run between the third and fourth quarter
exactly. That
they somehow pulled out there. Baylor, in that spot, treated them like Michael Myers in the old Halloween movies.
The recall.
I'm just saying, all of a sudden you start walking away after you think you get him down with a coat hanger, and then when the monster comes back down and is going at you again, that is UConn. You got to kill him twice in most of these spots, but Kim Mulkey, Baylor's head coach, got up after the game and talked first about that foul call and had this to say.
What did you see when DeJounay drove the ball from where you were standing?
What did you see?
I was surprised they didn't call a foul.
Then write it like that. You don't need a quote from me. I've got steal shots and video from two angles. One kid hits her in the face and one kid hits her on the elbow.
And so arguing in favor of her player, Shea, I look at that and I really see no harm, no foul, just because if I'm a player and I see my coach riding for me, that's always a net gain in the locker room. So
yeah, and I get that. And she's right. I mean, there's no lie there, not at all. Everything she says is right. Everyone saw what she says,
yes.
You know what I mean? And sometimes I feel like you didn't need to say it. We were going to say it for you. But I agree with you. No harm, no foul.
Well, speaking of didn't need to say it, Chinay Ngolick Jr.
Yeah.
Here on ESPN Radio.
File this directly at the top of that list.
This is right at the beginning of that, because Kim Mulkey did not stop there. And when given the free platform, unprompted, she had this to say, Baylor women's head coach, about what should happen for the remainder of the tournament relative to COVID-19 testing.
I don't think my words will matter. After the games today and tomorrow, there's four teams left, I think, on the men's side and the women's side. They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that end up having test positive or something and they don't get to play in a Final Four? So you need to just forget the COVID test and let the four teams that are playing in each Final Four go battle it out.
Okay. Mike, you want to go first? You want me?
I am amazed at. My first thought was, I can't imagine how hard it's been for Kim Mulkey to walk around the tournament bubble this entire time with this weighing on her heart. Because this was unprompted. Like, this wasn't something someone had to pull out of her here. This was Colonel Jessup at the end of A Few Good Men just begging to let someone know they ordered the code red. I'm sorry, I can't help it, Shea.
I love it. Okay, I just want to be, first of all, the first line that her words don't matter is insane to me.
Like, yes.
Of course your words always matter, but especially after a tournament game, your words matter. Okay, let's start there. Second of all, I just want to be sure I'm understanding this right. So in her opinion, you want to do away with COVID testing because these athletes have gone this far and you don't want them to be eliminated prior to the Final Four. Is that, I just want to be sure I'm understanding.
That is her logic.
That is the logic. Okay. And so I'm going to relate this to my own life because I'm about to have a baby in like 3 weeks. Okay. And before you go into the hospital, you have to be COVID tested. You and your husband, this is how it works. You test positive for COVID. You're in a different room. Masks need to be in place. Your husband can't be in the room. And there's protocols when it comes to holding your baby after it's born for everyone around you safety. This is how it works, at least in the state of Connecticut. Okay, fine. I understand that. And I'm going to deal with that. So why, though, would I decide, you know, I think we should do away with the COVID testing when I enter the hospital because I've come this far and I've worked this hard before I have a baby? I don't know. It impacts everyone around me's life. It impacts the nurses. It impacts me. It impacts my husband. It impacts the baby, the doctors, you name the people. And so that's why this protocol is put into place. Therefore, let me compare it to the Final Four or to the tournament, rather, and why it's important for these student athletes. Health and safety at the very top of the list for everyone involved. These players, these coaches, personnel, people working these tournaments, hotel staff, I don't care who it is. And heaven forbid you go into a game and someone tests positive for COVID and comes in contact with a male or female that has underlying health issues. I mean, aren't I just stating the obvious here?
At this point, we would think so because we're over a year into this now and we've all become accustomed to what you talked about there, that it's never really about just one person. But this is the other part of this that I think is probably the most impactful to me is it's a reminder. I don't think Kim Mulkey is the only person that thinks this. We know the world of sports is littered with powerful winning machines like Kim Mulkey, who in a lot of instances that we saw pop up along the way, viewed the things associated with COVID-19 as a competitive challenge, as how is this going to affect us competitively on the court? And that's clearly the lens that Kim views this through, is these kids have done so much in the name of competition. Why are we going to let a little thing like a global pandemic and our responsibility to other people come in the way of that? And that's the difficult part for
everyone.
And
you brought this up, so I don't want to steal your thunder, but I'm just going to lead you down this path. Wouldn't you think that at this juncture, it would be the easiest time to figure things out? Should someone test positive for COVID, you could reschedule the game, perhaps. Maybe you could figure out a reserve. I don't know, contact tracing at this point, because you've been in this bubble for so long. It just seems like such a bad time and such a bad thing to say in the moment or think ever. And I just can't understand it.
Especially right after a great performance, an unbelievable game, one of the best of the tournament for men's or women's in that spot, that's now overshadowed by these comments and what they mean. We'll stick with that because coming up next, we're going to talk to someone that knows a lot about Baylor basketball, about how big the gripe is for the women on that side, about the missed call at the end, and what we need to do with Kim Mulkey's comments going forward. We'll get to that after this word from Indeed. Now, regular job sites can take days to find the right candidate. With Indeed, it can take seconds, thanks to Indeed Instant Match. It searches millions of resumes in Indeed's database and then instantly finds you up to 20 people whose resumes match your job criteria. You want to narrow the list down even further? Add an Indeed skills test to see a candidate's skills that go beyond just their resume. Maybe that's why Indeed delivers four times more hires than all the other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Let's try and whittle it down to the Final Four next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Baylor moving on in the men's tournament. Baylor heading home very controversially on the women's side. Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Shea Cornett, kind enough to hang out with us today as Janae is off conquering the world.
Kind enough for you guys to have me. Thank you for letting me be here.
Always a lot of fun. We appreciate you. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And our guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And we have got a lot of Baylor-related topics to get to. And so we thought we might bring in someone who knows the program as well as anybody can. King McClure, our ESPN college basketball analyst and former guard for Baylor, kind enough to join us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And I'm just going to be curious because we're waiting to actually just finish patching him through right now. Oh, he's there. All right, perfect. I don't have to vamp at all here. King, what's going on?
What's up? What's up? How y'all doing?
We're doing great, man. We appreciate you taking the time. Your school is having a very successful run in both tournaments, and so we figure we got to get the inside look at all of this because the Baylor Lady Bears get sent home last night, a tough no-call at the end of that game. And so how big is the gripe right now? How salty is Bear Nation watching what happened at the end of that UConn game?
So, honestly, that game was crazy. The whole game, if you really watched it, was super crazy. However, that was a foul. Everybody saw it was a foul. If you didn't think it was a foul, you're blind. That's a foul. But Baylor Nation was able to bounce back with the men's team being able to beat Arkansas, get to the Final Four for the first time since 1950. That actually kind of maybe, you know, cheered a few people up. But that was a foul. Our women's team should still be in it. Sucks, but it is what it is.
So, King, another thing that has to do with the Lady Bears last night, Kim Mulkey, head coach, said essentially the NCAA should do away with COVID testing for the Final Four. And unfortunately, this kind of overshadowed what actually happened in the game a little bit. And I'm just wondering what your reaction was to her saying that and what your thoughts are.
Man, that's me personally, I don't agree with that. I think that if a player, if we were to do that and a player does have COVID and spreads it through amongst the whole program and the four programs that are playing, I think that would not be very smart to do. So I disagree with that statement 110%. I think we should still do COVID testing, keep people safe, because we're lucky enough to get to this point in the season. Let's not drop it in the last weekend and have a horrible outbreak. That'd be horrible. I disagree with that statement.
Chenang Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN college basketball analyst and former Baylor guard King McClure on the Goodyear Hotline. You mentioned the men's team in the win, that long drought, getting back to the Final Four now, and doing it behind the effort of Baylor head coach Scott Drew, is a guy that I know you know very well. How unique is Coach Drew, and why do you think this team this year was able to finally get over this hump?
Man, I really think it's just because of that, the whole joy mantra that they have. I mean, every time they post a picture on Instagram, Twitter, it's joy, which means Jesus, others, and yourself. So basically being so selfless, learning how to put your teammates first. So kind of like when you watch the game, Jared Butler has not been that great in the past, matter of fact, this whole tournament. But however, his teammates have stepped up. He's still happy. He's still cheering his teammates on because that's how important it is. And I think this team is so selfless. That's what makes them unique and special. This team cares about others. They want to see others do well and don't care who's the man that night. And when you have six or seven guys who can go get you 20 points every night, that right there is special. This team is deep and they're selfless. I think that's the biggest thing, the biggest key to success that we see in this team.
King, you brought up Butler, so I want to stay there. We always hear guard play wins in March. I mean, this team, this Baylor team, is three of the best guards playing right now in Mitchell, Butler, and Teague. And they're all two-way players. Why are those three so important to what the Bears do?
I think, one, because they're older. I think when you have older guards in March, yeah, guards win, but older guards usually are what really gets you over that hump. And when you look at it, Jared's 21, Davion's 22, Maceo's 23. Maceo's my age. We came out together. So these guys are older. They're experienced. They haven't been there, but in a sense, they've been there. They understand what it takes to win. I think that's the biggest reason why they're so successful. Number two, those guys are confident. I've seen it firsthand. Davion and Maceo sat out my senior year because they were transfers. Those guys are extremely confident, and they work their tails off because their confidence comes from the work they put in behind closed doors, and you see it right now. So confidence and their age, I think those two things is why these guards are so successful.
Yeah, we generally tend to see, you're right, that age and experience shine through in this time of year. King, we know coming into the tournament, Gonzaga was most people's favorite heading into this. They got USC matched up tonight, big-time matchup of some potential lottery picks in the upcoming NBA draft. But looking, USC factored into this, but even going on, who do you think right now has the best chance to challenge Gonzaga coming in as the one overall seed?
For sure, Baylor. I mean, I think Baylor and Gonzaga are neck and neck, hands down, probably 1A, 1B, whichever way you want to spin it. But I think Baylor has the best chance. I mean, USC will probably give them a tough matchup. If Michigan wins, Michigan is a great team, too. They don't have Isaiah Livers right now, but they're a really great team, too. Juwan Howard really does a great job with those guys. They'll probably give them a little challenge, but I think Baylor and Gonzaga's 1A, 1B. I think Baylor is the best chance to beat Gonzaga and potentially could beat Gonzaga.
Awesome stuff. Check him out. Follow him on Twitter, at KingMcClure22. Doing a great job breaking down college basketball over ESPN for us here. King, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Man, I appreciate y'all having me.
Thanks, King.
King was brought to you by Wendy's, proud sponsor of the 2021 John R. Wooden Men's and Women's Player of the Year. By, man, just oozing Baylor pride on that one. Like, didn't even blink when I asked him to challenge
Baylor.
Gonzaga.
It's Baylor, of course.
Obviously.
Although, Baylor really could, though. I mean, it's not like he's reaching very far. The way they have, like we talked about, those guards, two-way players, the perimeter. Baylor's a good team now.
It is a good team. And so, listen, that's always nice. Like, listen, selfishly, we know this. We're going to get to talk about your background as an IU grad there and some of the things that are going on in the tournament that may hit a little bit close to home.
Thank you, Mike.
Life is a lot easier to operate when your team is doing well. I know that as a...
That is more than true.
I spent the first portion of my life, probably the first 20 years of my life, watching a lot of, like, 7-6-win Notre Dame teams. So,
yep.
It's a lot easier.
Everything's better when it's sunny and when you're winning.
That we know for sure. But coming up next, there has been one player who so far in this draft cycle has not been getting the wins that I thought he deserved. He went up, showed up, and showed out today. Will Justin Fields start to get some of the climb up draft boards that has baffled many people, including myself? We'll get to that next.
Hello.
I have tossed a break I don't know how many times. I don't even know what that was. Cliff, make sure we cut that, get back to it. We got to break down exactly what just happened in my brain right there.
I do it all the time. It's okay. We know where we're going. A commercial.
To a commercial. We're going to go to a commercial, and then we're going to come back and talk about Justin Fields here on Shanae and Golic Jr. Shea Cornett filling in with us on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Justin Fields start to get some of the climb up draft boards that has baffled many people, including myself. We'll get to that next.
Hello.
Shanae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. Shea Cornett. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And that was apparently me trying to tease whatever we were going to talk about this segment.
You were combining Shea with Shanae, I think.
Yes. So we'll get to that next.
Hello.
This is, and you know what, Shay, this unfortunately, like, this is a big moment of shame for me. So Kelsey Riggs, who works over at the ACC Network along with Jordan, does a great job there. She's come over here and co-host a couple of times. She sat in on one show. We did 3 hours of radio together. And then as we were getting ready to go in the last segment, I looked directly in her eyes and called her Chine.
Yeah.
I had called her Kelsey the entire show, and I've been so conditioned right now.
Come on. I have yet to call you Jordan, but I'm sure I'll yell at you at some point, and Jay or Jordan will slip out of my mouth. You just haven't made me mad enough yet, but it'll come. It's inevitable at some point.
That is very true. You know what? And I'm trying my best to, like, stay on your good side here, but I know eventually I'm going to say something dumb enough, and it's probably going to be when we talk about IU in the next hour here at some point.
You made some slick comments, I think, about James Harden earlier. Like, yeah. It'll come, eventually.
There we go. So you know what? Coming up in a little bit here right now, I am going to see if I can get Shay mad enough to call me her husband's name in that, which is just
What a fun segment.
What a strange sentence to say out loud right there. What's even more strange is I try and steer this barge back out here and not get stuck in the Suez Canal. Shay, we've had so much going on in draft conversations this offseason about the quarterbacks in this NFL draft, and I have been amazed that Justin Fields has been largely left out of the discourse near the top of this draft when we talk about San Fran trading up to 3, and even the foregone conclusion that is for most people Zach Wilson and the Jets. All of this has been a very confusing exercise for me, and so I had this moment, Shay, where Justin Fields had his pro day today. Mm-hmm. He runs a 4.44 40, which for a quarterback is the fastest time, I believe, since Robert Griffin III ran a 4.41. And I was sad because I thought that might be the thing that gets people to finally stand up and talk enough about a quarterback that I just don't see what everyone else is missing right now. Like, why are we not talking more about Justin Fields leading up to this draft?
So I don't understand this either, Mike, but I do feel like there's a few reasons. One, the last time we saw Justin Fields on a football field was against Alabama. And there's this Alabama effect that they, like, literally swallow you whole, especially defensively. Therefore, that impacts the quarterback and the offense. And so we have this image of Justin Fields not being able to compete at the highest level against these kind of competitions. But then it brings me to Zach Wilson. And I'm like, well, okay, Zach Wilson had a really good pro day. He's throwing in shorts to guys that he knows indoors. I mean, Of course he had a really good pro day, you know? And I didn't watch as much BYU football as I did Ohio State and Big Ten football, and I know what Justin Fields is capable of. Justin Fields played against 5 ranked teams this year, okay, including in the college football playoff. Zach Wilson played against 2 ranked teams, and one of those resulted in a loss. Now, obviously, Justin Fields had some losses in there, too. And in that loss, he threw 1 touchdown and 1 interception. I'm just saying, like, we can talk about the sample sizes. I know the Big Ten schedule was weird and the games were cut short, and we've had those conversations already. But this notion that Zach Wilson is now a much better QB at the next level than Justin Fields is, seems out of left field to me.
It does, because Justin Fields is a guy with incredible tools. Like, his physical gifts are again, on display, a 4.44 40 this day on Ohio State's pro day. Like, that is just the tip of the iceberg with this guy and all this stuff. So you're right. I'm amazed in those same ways. And I want to finally put to bed one of those things that we do, say Ohio State quarterbacks can't succeed. We've got the recency of Dwayne Haskins that a lot of people would point to and say, these guys don't work in the NFL. Why none of that should apply to Justin Fields. But first, I want to let Marcus Spears tell you guys what I said on this show a while back when we were doing Book It one day about how, before it's all said and done, Justin Fields should have his day in court for a conversation around that number 2 overall pick. Here was Marcus Spears on Get Up, our ESPN NFL analyst and former NFL defensive lineman, making that claim for Justin Fields at the 2 spot.
If you had that pick and Trevor Lawrence is off the board, Marcus, who are you taking?
Justin Fields, the guy at Ohio State, who played against the competition, like I mentioned before, and played well. And obviously he has things to work on. And I see the talent that people are talking about in Zach Wilson. But y'all, like, I get it. The evaluation happens and guys get broken down to they break pads and they the worst football player before the draft. And then you mold them up to be that guy. But I just remember coming off an NFL season where we were talking about guys like Justin Fields taking the jump. We were looking at Justin Herbert. We were looking at Josh Allen. We were looking at a lot of guys with flaws, with these physical attributes that went into the NFL. Took them a little bit to develop, but then we saw what they could do because of that other part of their game, and that's being uber athletes. So, look, Zach Wilson has had his pro day. I'll be super interested after Justin Fields perform at his pro day if any of this tune changes, because to me, he's been the second quarterback in this draft.
Was obviously before Justin Fields' pro day, where he ran that 40, threw some incredible passes, and overall made moves at his pro day.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
Shay, I will say this, though, when it comes to the comparisons that people make with old Ohio State quarterbacks, there really isn't much comparison when you look at how the offense operated with Justin Fields versus Dwayne Haskins before him. Because when you look at that offense, Dwayne Haskins, when it came to passes at or behind the line of scrimmage, that was 24% of Ohio State's offense with Dwayne Haskins, 18.8% with Justin Fields. When you look at his balls downfield, 20 or more yards downfield attempts, 17.3% of Justin Fields' pass attempts were down 20-plus yards downfield. For Dwayne Haskins, 10.7%. Average air yards per attempt, so how far he's throwing the ball in the air. Justin Fields averaged 10.34 air yards per attempt. Dwayne Haskins, 7.87. The offenses were so different. What was asked of Dwayne was so different than comparing or judging him by that is insane.
We do the same thing with Alabama quarterbacks because of the AJ McCarron comparison, I feel like. But look at Tua Tagovailoa. Look at Jalen Hurts. These are 2 potential starters next year in the NFL. It's not fair to compare programs.
It never is, and yet people always fall into that lazy trap. So don't let people get you with any sort of nonsense like that. Let's judge Justin Fields off what he's done, which has been more than enough so far. But coming up next, let's speculate a little bit and look at some secret love affair starting in the NBA and what it might mean for the future of super teams next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.